Welcome back, Lightning Within 5 listeners. I'm your host, Jennifer Jensen. Today, Saren Alvarez is behind the mic, but today is the day. It is the kickoff of our 2024 Gulf Coast Salute Air Show that is happening down in Panama City Beach. And we have a very, very special guest today on our podcast, Miss Kelly Girardi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Such an honor to be here.
For those of you who don't know, she's pretty big in the science world, and she's been to space and just a whole slew of things. I don't even know where to start. So go ahead, Kelly. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, that's so kind of you. I will start at the very beginning, but I'll keep it super brief. So I was born and raised in Jupiter, Florida, which is very on brand for someone with my particular passions in life. And I grew up wanting to be a part of space exploration. I grew up being able to see space shuttle launches from my bedroom window, which framed that stretch of sky over Cape Canaveral in Florida. And I wanted to be a part of that. And more than just flying myself, I wanted to help open up access to space for the next generation of researchers and civilians. And I set out in my career to work on every aspect of that, whether it was policy and regulatory reform to reusable rocket technology and eventually microgravity research. And so I've done a lot of testing here on Earth in parabolic flight, which are those zero-G flights where you get brief bursts of microgravity. And during that time, I've been able to test technologies, evaluate prototype spacesuits, all sorts of fun things. And then my research institute made history. Last year, I flew to space as a payload specialist on a dedicated research mission with Virgin Galactic, and I was tasked with operating three different science experiments in space, and it was the honor of a lifetime. And outside of space, I'm a mom to a six-year-old little girl named Delta V. I'm an author of children's books and a huge fan of all things aviation and aerospace.
That is so awesome. I don't even know where to start. Like, that was the coolest intro that we've ever had on our podcast. So thank you for that. So what inspired you to pursue a career in STEM and ultimately fly to space?
Yeah, I have always been so inspired. I really did have these front row seats to the final frontier from childhood and growing up thinking, what would it be like to be a part of that one day? And also realizing that the limiter to human spaceflight has always been access and not aptitude. That was something that I really wanted to play a part in helping change and open up. And that I thought, you know, that Star Trek future that I think many of us dream of, I wanted to be a part of helping engineer that future and bringing it to reality for the next generation. So that was probably my biggest inspiration.
So as a little girl, you've had all these big, big dreams, and, you know, I don't know how old you are exactly. How old are you?
35.
Okay, so like when we were little, females really didn't, you know, venture into this world. So like, what doors did you have to push through, you know, to get to the point where you're at?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting to reflect on. So when I flew to space last November 2023, I became the 677th human to fly to space and only the 90th woman. And as of time of recording this, we still have not crossed 100 women in space yet. But, you know, with access to space increasing for researchers and for civilians and different types of commercial spacecraft and different points of access, we will double, triple, quadruple those numbers in the coming years. And I'm so excited to see that and help play a small role in it. For me, thinking of this sort of new territory, I would say one of the most profound reflections was my mom came to my spaceflight, and so did my daughter. And just thinking about the different experiences of three generations of women in my family, my mom was born, not to age her, but before humans had ever flown to space. Yeah. And when she was growing up, women weren't yet eligible in the United States. And one single generation later, she's watching her daughter reach for the stars. She's watching her granddaughter take it for granted. And I think that's just such an incredible paradigm shift. And yeah, it really brought tears to my eyes. Absolutely. Just seeing all three of us on that flight line.
That is so cool. That is such a good story to share, like all three of you guys out there. So can you share a bit about the specific research you conducted while you were in space? Like, I know you say payload, So explain what that means to our normal people that are listening.
Yeah, absolutely. So payload and being a payload specialist is just a fancy way of saying I'm trained to operate experiments and technologies in space. And so I carried three different experiments with me to space on behalf of our research institute, and they were related to fluid research and healthcare research. One of the experiments was a free-floating fluid cell, and so it was liquid in a cylinder that I was free-floating in space, and it was designed to help us better understand how to control and predict the behavior of fluid in a container in microgravity. That's really important, let's say, in the future if you're administering medication in space. How do you make sure you only get medication out of a syringe and not air in a zero-G environment, or life support systems where liquid flows through, things like that. Another experiment was a continuous glucose monitor, a CGM, one of the first times a CGM has been worn in space. We were studying insulin resistance in spaceflight, but another reason that that was important to me, my mom has been insulin resistant my entire life, and insulin dependent my entire life, and I have a large social media following of parents, many of whom have type 1 diabetic kiddos, and when that diagnosis happens in childhood for juvenile diabetes and type 1 diabetes, the doctor says, don't worry, we're going to be able to manage this. You're going to live a great life. The only thing you can't do is be an astronaut, as though that's already such a far-fetched idea. But that's no longer true. And I was really excited to give a little bit of visible representation to medical equipment like this in space. And the third one was the AstroSkin. It's a wearable sensor system that I wore under my flight suit. It's currently worn by astronauts on the International Space Station. But my flight was the first time we were able to collect data during launch, re-entry, and landing as well.
Oh, wow.
And when you think about, you know, fewer than 100 women have ever flown to space, and most of them had a very homogenous and similar medical profile prior to my flight, it helps create a new data set for how space affects a normal, off-the-street fit civilian body.
Yeah. I love that you're pioneering all these things for women or, like, specific groups, like the people that have diabetes. Like, I never would have thought, like, we need diabetes research in space, but that makes so much sense because that opens the doors, you know, to a group of people who think they're going to be limited when they, you know, grow up. So that's fantastic.
And
I love that.
It's a big picture too, right? When I think about space exploration and, you know, I think the conversation is actually really about the future of our species as a whole. And so I think trying to engineer that from the start in the most inclusive and expansive way really serves all of us for our next giant leaps.
Yeah. And who knows, like, maybe we'll all live in space someday.
Exactly.
So, and people are going to still have diabetes.
Right. And you're going to need to administer medication.
Exactly. So how did you train for space, and how did that experience help contribute to all these endeavors?
Yeah, the training is something I really was so grateful that I had in such a dynamic environment as space. So I have spent years doing parabolic research flights. Like I mentioned, here on Earth, it's where an aircraft, I fly often in a Falcon 20, where it takes almost a roller coaster profile, up and down and up and down. And when it's going down for, you know, 20 seconds or so, you get a burst of zero gravity, microgravity. And then when it pulls up, you get high G and over. That's why they call it the vomit comet. And that's been really helpful for me to really understand how to move in a safe and controlled way in an environment like microgravity.
Yeah.
So to train for my space flight, I really like to joke that I just upped my dose of vitamin G. I did a lot of microgravity, zero G flights. I did a lot of high G aerobatic flights, and that helped validate sensor placement, helped validate my choreography in the cabin.
Gotcha.
And then I did a lot of training specifically with the payload integration team with Virgin Galactic. It was the first time they ever allowed someone to free float something in their cabin, which, you know, is a huge safety and operational thing to make sure we had right. So I practiced literally blindfolded and with one hand to know that I could safely unstow and restow my payload so that it wouldn't accidentally become a hazard during reentry or boost in the cabin.
Wow, that's intense. So you're going on these flights, correct? Like up and down?
Yeah.
You know? Oh my gosh. I get motion sickness so terribly. And just the thought of that makes me nauseous.
Sure, I was joking today, you know, thinking about what it's a tremendous honor to get to fly with the Thunderbirds. And I was joking earlier that, you know, I've never yet gotten motion sickness, but yes. I don't want anyone to take that as a challenge today.
Yeah. No, thank you, Thunderbirds. We need her later. Don't do that. Okay. So as a woman in a traditionally male-dominated role, what challenges did you face trying to get to the point you're at?
Yeah, you know, I reflect now about how many self-imposed limitations I think I had, and I think about sort of, you know, my own framework growing up as a child and how early in life things like gender schemas are formed in our mind, what we perceive ourselves to be good at or what's for us versus I'm not good at that, that's not for me, and how early that gets sort of cemented and becomes a rigid.
Right.
And I think there was a lot of unlearning that I had to do growing up. And I think that when I had the opportunity to fly to space, I was really aware of how few women we have historically seen in these roles. Mm-hmm. And so bringing my full self to space, so to speak, was really important to me from the perspective of visible representation. And I love seeing it through the eyes of my six-year-old daughter, Delta V, a very nerdy name, a reference to spacecraft flight dynamics. But in her mind, you know, going to space is just what girls do, you know? And if you tell her, you know, draw an astronaut, if I was drawing one, in my mind, I still think of a man.
Yeah.
And in her mind, she's drawing a girl when someone says, just draw an astronaut. And better, she's drawing herself because she just takes it as an obvious that one day, sure, if I choose to pursue that path, I could do that. That's for me. That's for girls.
I love that.
And I think it's just a really sweet thing to see that needle move in your own household.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love that so much. Later today, you get to meet a great group of girls from Tyndall Academy. They just launched a STEM summer camp last year, and it was a large majority of girls in that camp. So we invited them to come meet you, but just like your daughter, those girls are making moves and they know that, you know, their possibilities are endless.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to meet them. And you're so right. I mean, this type of exposure is so critical and so important. And it really does help show that not even the sky is a limit.
Yes, yes. I love that so much. We are definitely breaking barriers for the next generation. That is for sure. So how do you think we can encourage more, you know, little girls or even women our age to pursue STEM education and careers?
Yeah, I think there is still a lot of visible representation that can be really helpful. You know, for me in particular, one of the struggles transparently was balancing family desires and obligations with career ambition. I am someone who grew up knowing that one day I did want to have a family. I wanted to be a mother, wanted children. I also had pretty big dreams and career goals that I wanted to achieve. And those all happen to crunch in the same time frame for a woman, you know, that typically when you hit your career crescendo is also when you're probably, you know, in your family planning stage. And so balancing all of that can be kind of tricky. So I am a big proponent of, you know, helping work on solutions for paid parental leave and, you know, helping ensure that these structures are available to support women in the workforce. And I think it's incredibly valuable, not just for an individual family, but for our country as a whole, to make sure that we're not losing this talent that could otherwise and wants to keep contributing. And then I also think that, you know, I try to use my social media platform and share so much of my personal life on there because I do want to reach young women who have career and family aspirations and encourage them that, yes, it is possible to do both. And I also want to reach women who are in my same position and may be thinking on any given day or week when those scales don't balance and they're feeling guilt that it's okay. Yeah. You're doing great.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And you're working towards something that's going to be such an amazing legacy for your family.
I love that. If anybody is unaware, Kelly's pretty popular on social media. The second I said her name, our lieutenant, she's in her early 20s. She was like, Kelly Girardi, I know exactly who you're talking about. I follow her and I love her.
That's so kind.
Yeah. So if you guys don't know, check her out on Instagram or TikTok, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. She posts a lot of like good feeling things, a lot of STEM things. So, okay. So as we were discussing, you know, the mom and career balance, how do you balance everything? You're a busy woman.
Yeah, absolutely. I balance a number of roles that I'm equally passionate about across the board. And in my day job, I lead global mission operations for Palantir Technologies. I'm a bioastronautics researcher with my research institute. I'm a mom, a wife, a daughter, a friend, you know, you name it. I've got a lot of different identities. And I will say that I don't think that work-life balance is something that feels true for me. Instead, it's more of work-life integration. I don't hold myself to the standard of needing every single day to be equally balanced, or every single week even,
yep.
But the months and the years are. And when I feel a shift one way or the other, I'm able to correct and invest more where I feel that it's needed, whether that be work or whether that be with my family. And I think sort of pursuing that with a feeling of, you know, not having any guilt mm-hmm. about it. You know, my dreams only got deeper and bolder when I became a mom, and there's even more meaning behind the future that I would love to see my daughter and my family, you know, live in one day. And right. so I view time away from her as time spent invested. And I think that mindset, more than anything, has been really helpful. And then tactically, I'm really, really blessed to have a mom like I have, who, she's with me here today with my yeah. daughter, and my daughter's young enough that I'm able to, I'll put it this way, it's more easy for me to pull her out of kindergarten than it is for me to pull my husband out of work yeah. to go do something yeah. fun like this. And so today I have my mom who's helping out and my daughter with me, and I'm able, when we can, to share those experiences and blend them all together as a family.
That's fantastic. So what does your husband do?
He works in aerospace and defense as well.
So oh, man.
We've got one theme in this family yeah. and we keep it consistent.
I love that. I love that. Hence your daughter's name, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Okay, so can you share with us what the most memorable moment or experience from your career has been thus far?
Yeah, you know, this probably won't be surprising, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about space because that was really the most profound moment in my career. As I mentioned earlier, I felt so incredibly well-trained. I knew exactly what to expect. I knew what was expected of me from an operational perspective, from a science perspective. The one thing that I don't think I ever could have prepared for was the moment of seeing our planet from space with my own eyes.
Yeah.
That was an intensely emotional moment. You know, there's a word for it. They call it the overview effect. It was coined by Frank White. And I do believe it was this cognitive shift in perspective. And in that moment, for me, we've all seen images of the Earth from much further away than I was. The difference was experiencing Earth yeah. as a planet. Yeah. And that cognitive dissonance of being both a part of it and slightly outside of it, and then the real mind bend, not realizing in that moment that I was not on the same planet as my baby.
Yeah.
And it was just this intensely emotional feeling. And that emotional saturation has been one of the unexpected, for me, consequences of spaceflight for the last few months. It's actually, today is my 6-month anniversary of flying to space.
That's so cool.
And I still feel higher highs and lower lows, just an emotional saturation in all aspects of life after yeah. that amazing experience that I don't know that I'll ever find the words to do justice. So that definitely would be my big moment.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I can't imagine what that feels like. We had an astronaut at our last Air Force ball, and he talked about that too, and how it was just so overwhelming, like mentally, physically, emotionally. Right. And he was like, you don't get past it. He's like, but it just makes you realize like how small your world is, your life, right? And how much you need to appreciate every single moment in that world.
Absolutely. And the fragility, you know, I expected to see, you know, the blue water, all the colors you would normally associate with Earth. And what I saw that, you know, was so dramatic and beautiful was this like neon thin blue band of atmosphere. And thinking
yeah.
about that from the perspective, like you're mentioning of fragility
yeah.
also, it's like, oh my gosh, that's what's kind of keeping us safe from,
this,
you know, the expanse of yeah. space and everything we know and love and every human. And, you know, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. Wow. I'm so like flabbergasted. I love hearing people talk about it, right? Because I'm never going to do it because obviously...
Never say never.
No, I'm literally never going to do it. I get motion sick, so I'm out.
It's good to have boundaries.
I will support you from the ground. I will do everything I can to make sure you do it, but I'm out.
Fair.
So how do you see the landscape of space research evolving in the next couple of years?
Yeah, I think this is just such an incredibly exciting time for humanity, for space exploration, for our future. We are still at the very, very beginning of humanity's journey in space. We've taken our first small steps. We're really well positioned for our next giant leaps. But I think we're going to need all hands on deck for that from everyone. I'm excited to see representation increase in space in every dimension. But to put it into perspective, again, I do believe when we're talking about space exploration, we are talking about the future of humanity as a whole. And we really do need to have a variety of perspectives, of talents, Yes. You know, being a part of that conversation. And my favorite quote ever sums that sentiment up really perfectly. It says, "There are no passengers on spaceship Earth. We are all crew." And so my hope is that everyone is able to find a way and their own way to contribute to that future.
Yeah. Do you think that we will be living in space before the end of our lifetime?
I am notoriously bad at crystal balls. I predict all of these like highly ambitious, you know, optimistic glass half full views of what and when we will achieve different space milestones. What I can say with confidence is yes, we will be living in space. We must. Yeah. It is our destiny to expand outward. How long it will be before we can really self-sufficiently do that, I don't know, but I would say that we're well on our way there. I mean, my daughter is born in a time where she has never known another reality than one where humans are living and working full-time in space. You know, I think that is one of those big steps in the direction of like our new normal and right. Building off of what we've learned there and going ever further. What I'm really hopeful for is seeing boots on Mars in our lifetime.
Yeah.
That's just one milestone that I have always... grown up, science fiction, big fan, Stranger in a Strange Land. I Mars has always been our closest neighbor and, you know, the one that's calling from a really just inspirational perspective. So I would love to see that.
Yeah. So today you get to fly with the Thunderbirds. That's a pretty rare opportunity.
It is unbelievable. I am giddy. I wish this was a video podcast as well so you could see my grin stretching ear to ear. But I'm so excited for the opportunity. I mean, the talent in this team and just the power of this aircraft, it's just something really, really special.
Yeah. Yesterday, we were watching them as they arrived. But everything was like watching a performance, right? Like they do everything simultaneously in uniform. And it's just crazy to watch. I'm a little upset that we don't get like the full ground show because our base is a hot mess right now because of construction. But the fact that you get to go up there, and those guys are the best of the best in the Air Force. So.
The best of the best. The precision Yes. And the no margin for error. It's talent at the top of their game. And that's something that I have just so much respect and awe for.
Yes.
And so I'm so excited. And I think the pilot that I'm so lucky to fly with today is also very close friends with one of my spaceship pilots, because that community is so small of
Yes.
the talent density and that, you know, pilot community at this level is just extraordinary. Right. So I'm so excited.
Are you going to ask your pilot to do any special maneuvers while y'all are up there?
My goal is to join the 9G club. So okay. that's really, you okay. know, I've got one thing, whether I'm fully conscious and present for it doesn't really matter to me. I just want to say I was there and got the t-shirt. I'm really excited about it. I'm again, I'm really lucky. I've never experienced motion sickness yet Yeah. in my career. There's always a first time, but whatever happens, it's worth it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Kelly, I think that about wraps it up. We want to thank you so much for being on our podcast, and to all the listeners, stay tuned because today, which is Friday, May 3rd, we will be doing a practice run with the whole air show lineup. So if you can't make it out on Saturday or Sunday, today is the day to look up in the sky and see not only the Thunderbirds, but Kelly flying by and doing our practice run. Saturday and Sunday will be full-blown air show. So if you want to see center stage, you want to go down to Pier Park. And the big long pier down there, that is center stage. So you can spread out, or if you have a boat, you can view it from the water. There will be water police, so please don't cross the boundaries. And also, the air show is not at Tyndall, people. Don't come here. It's not here. And nor can you pet the jets. So unfortunately, you got to go down to PCB. All right. Miss Kelly, thank you so much again. This was an honor to have you on our show, and we look forward to your flight.
Thank you so much. The honor is mine. I will be waving at everyone. Please wave back.